Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello, this is Ian Lee. Thank you so much for downloading Ian Lee's Random Access Memories, a retro gaming podcast. Do check out the Patreon, patreon.com/IanLee, IAINLEE. And also go to my YouTube channel and look for the Random Access Memories there. Again, it's youtube.com/IanLee. Thanks for downloading. Welcome to another exciting edition of Random Access Memories. And I've just realized I never say what this is at the beginning of the podcast. It's a show where I invite people to come on and bring one retro game and we talk about it, except we don't really talk about it. We talk about other stuff. I am joined by Rose Tinted Spectrum. That's your YouTube handle. And as we were building up to this, I was thinking, I don't know his name. And it's a mystery. And I was looking everywhere and I thought, it's not on the YouTube channel. It's not on there. It's on there. And I've just seen it. You've got it written down on your
screen. It literally is right in front of us. The mystery has been ruined.
His name's David. I love your channel. Thank you. I've only discovered it recently. You reached out to me about something and I thought, it's another one of those. Those hustlers. I'll ignore this jerk. But, the last month or so, I've been obsessed with your channel, Rose Tinted Spectrum. I'll talk about the bits that I really dug in a moment. Why did you start doing it?
Well, two reasons, really. One of them, I'd gone through like a big period of anxiety and depression. And as I was coming out of that, I just decided I wanted to do something that was outside what I would normally do. Almost like I can bring myself back to where it was. How about stepping over that line, which is a bit of a mad decision to make in a kind of vulnerable state. But one of the ideas that I came up with through like the lightest of research, really, because I didn't watch an awful lot of YouTube back then, was going back and playing the games that I grew up with, which started off with the ZX Spectrum. And when I went and looked at other channels that were doing the same thing, I knew that none of them were doing it in the way that I would do it. And that was all I needed to just go, okay, well, I'll just do that then, and went from there.
And by doing it the way you do it, you mean swearing a lot?
Pretty much. I think it's that.
I love it. And that's not a criticism. You know my previous career. A good F-bomb, it's perfectly timed. Yeah,
it is. You just pepper it. Just pepper it on there a little bit. I think it's that, but it's also just the idea of game design in general, I think, isn't really spoken about in terms of like really early stuff. You'll get people who will just go back and play it and be like, I like this. It was great. And it's still okay now. And then that's kind of like the level of conversation that a lot of the videos get to. And those are nice. But it's nice, I think, when you look at the landscape of gaming now and how vast the games are and the like 5,000 man teams to make a single game, and then you've got a game that came out in 1984 made by some 14-year-old in his bedroom and published by a big label. I just find it fascinating to go back.
It's funny you mentioned that. Last week's episode, we talked about Sim, a game on the BBC. Mm. Today, I had a Zoom call with the guy that wrote Sim. He was 15. He did it over the summer holidays. Wow. He got fleeced by these dodgy... he got paid a couple of grand, which is a lot of money. Yeah. It was a big selling game. And he ducked out of his A-levels to write the sequel that never happened. He was overly ambitious, and then he kind of missed it. So you're right. I find it fascinating, that early 80s ethic of it's a kid in their bedroom, or it's like someone doing a degree. It seemed anyone could write a game and have success with it.
Yeah. And you've kind of got that now. You've got that in the indie game scene where they're still continuing that. But even the indie game scene nowadays, I think sometimes it feels sort of elevated above what it once was, because again, you've usually got small teams working on things. Yeah. It's very rare you get a single person who is just sat down, because back then, as you say, a single summer, you had a game. Even if you were working on a game now, you're talking quite a long time to get
Did you ever try and do it? Did you ever have a go at writing a game?
Yeah. Ooh, but not very well, I will say. I think I followed like a guide from one of the Spectrum, This Is How You Code books. I was probably only like 9 or 10 at the time, and my attention span was completely off the grid anyway. And I seem to remember finally getting to the end and typing it all out, making little adjustments here and there, because I kind of understood what they were talking about. Press play for the first time, and it was complete garbled nonsense. It just didn't work. So I was like, I'm never trying that again.
You've just reminded me. A little note, if you're listening to the podcast version of this, stay tuned to after the show, especially if you've got a Spectrum. It might be a cheeky little bonus tagged on at the end, is all I'm going to say.
Fancy.
It goes from some way, I'm kind of, you know, I've done TV and radio for years and years and years, okay? And I've dabbled with retro gaming and writing bits for Retro Gamer. So in the last 6 months, I've sort of dived in, tried to become part of the community, been to some shows, started doing this podcast. Mm. What was the step for you where you thought, right, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to make a video?
Honestly, there really wasn't one. Like my very first video is not actually available anymore. I enlisted it because a lot of that earlier stuff, I had no background in making anything really. Yeah. I knew about writing because I've done a lot of writing before, and I just thought, you know what, delivery's just the next step, isn't it? You write stuff down, you just say it out loud. But then I soon found that writing to be read is very different for writing to be spoken aloud. So it took a while to get to that point. But the very first one that I did was like, there was this bit at the start. I had all these lofty ideas of what I was going to do. So the start was almost like Brass Eye, is the only way I could describe it, because I'm a big fan of Chris Morris's stuff and like comedians in general. And it was all this about what I was going to do is, for each game, I would talk about that year in general, set the scene with the year. So I was doing like a news report and all of this and blah, blah, blah. But then watching it back now, I mean, it's been like 5 years since I first did that. And I've moved on so far that I've got it in the head of, if I came across a channel and that was the first video I saw, I would think, oh, this is very amateurish. I can't possibly watch any more. They'd probably say that about the stuff now. However, to me, looking back at that, I'm like, it's not quite there.
Oh, I would, au contraire on the amateurish now. I'm blown away by the amount of work you put into stuff. Yeah. I don't. This podcast is just going to be the audio ripped off of a Zoom call. How lazy is that?
I'm not saying I don't put the effort in. It's just like it's a great deal of effort for something that I am sellotaping together at the other end.
But it looks really, really good. What got me into your channel, right, was the and I've told you this, you know, in our DMs and stuff, this first time we've ever spoken, it's nice to meet you, by the way.
Yeah, you too.
The Breaking Bad influence, where you watch almost every episode, and we'll get to that in a second, of Bad Influence, a 90s gaming show that was kind of on. I think I was probably at university and I was out of the gaming world, so I have a vague recollection of it. I remember Violet Berlin, of course. I remember Andy Crane, one of Britain's greatest broadcasters,
of course.
And so I vaguely, and I in 2 weeks, I caned all four seasons of you talking over it. And oh my God, it was that full on, just one more before bed.
Yeah.
And I was pissing myself. There was a lovely bit, and it won't do it justice, where there's some kid, the kids are reviewing the games, and the kid says something like, "Oh, I've never played Sonic," and you just went, "Yeah, good story, mate." And that was, and that totally did me in. That totally did me in. A lot of work, though, man.
Yeah, and I think that's Breaking Bad Influence is probably a really good example of an evolution of my channel in general, because I started that episode one was not that far off me first starting out, and you can see like quite a big difference in the editing style and the voiceover work from the very first episode to the last one that I've done. It's because I've learned how to get the best out of stuff along the way. So it's an interesting journey, not just for watching Bad Influence again, if anyone is interested in doing so, but the actual channel as well. I think it spans that entire time. So
I cannot stress enough, it's so funny. And then I go off on rabbit holes, because then I'm finding, well, what does Sonia Saul do now? She's a barrister.
Yes.
Where is Zed now? Can't find him, but I did watch the sex education video.
Yes.
Is it true they call an erection a boner? So loads of rabbit holes. There are a few episodes left that you haven't done. Is that right? I'm not putting pressure on you.
No, we're on two. I'm currently in the middle of doing the next one. And then it's the finale. I've finally got through every single goddamn episode of that show, which is not something I really thought about when I first started doing it. You've got four seasons of this, David. Just calm yourself down.
If you watch it, dear listener, I will warn you, you will never be able to talk about the internet again without going, "Information superhighway."
It's an earworm. It's an earworm.
People love it, though. People love it. I've read all the comments on there for the internet. Most of them are really good.
Yes.
What's that like? You've put all this work in. You've put this effort in. You've sent it out there. Oh, and you're getting good stuff back. What is that like for you?
Well, I mean, I love it. And I think it's a bit of a byproduct of not really growing incredibly quickly. It's been very much a word of mouth thing, because a lot of the way I've always said it is, a lot of the games that I cover, nobody has heard of them.
Yeah.
Or no people have heard of them and they never want to see them again. So it's not a channel that people are necessarily searching for, but I think once people do eventually stumble across it, then they enjoy it and they share it around. And I've noticed that certainly now. I mean, oh God, I think the last year alone, when I looked at the statistics, it was something ridiculous. Like that one year, last year, had the most views and the most subscribers than all of the other years combined together, because it just got to that point of it's just slowly.
It's becoming its own thing.
Exactly. So I was really happy with that. And it allowed that audience to kind of take ownership of me, I guess is the best way to put it.
It's well deserved. And I tell you what totally swung it for me, where I thought this channel is not just really, really good, it's great, is when I saw a video, school kids are being taught how to program ZX Spectrum games. I thought, oh,
yes.
Oh no, this is going to be, he's going to tear them apart. And then I read one of the first comments was from the teacher that runs this coding class, mm-hmm. saying, "This is so great. The kids are going to be absolutely thrilled. Thank you so much." And it could have been really easy target. I love the easy target. It could have been an easy target. And you treated it with such love and respect, and you would have made the day for those kids. It's something they didn't look at any of your other videos.
Yes, it will, yeah.
But that was the thing that swung it to me. I thought, oh, yeah, this guy's good. Hey, this guy's good.
Well, I think that goes with Bad Influence as well, because I've had a couple, like, we're talking a very small amount, of very angry comments. How dare you sit there? I think one of them said, "How dare you sit there in your sweatpants and talk about the show in this way?" I was very angry. I'm wearing jeans at the minute, but no, I am normally wearing sweatpants, so I got slightly paranoid. And I thought, well, this guy doesn't quite get it, because it's not that I'm making fun of the show or the kids. I'm not like seriously saying you are wrong to a child that was on television 20 years ago necessarily. I'm obviously doing it for comedic effect, but it also comes from a place of love, because I grew up with Bad Influence at the perfect age. So it's almost like, I mean, I'm a northerner, so northerners in general are quite aggressively lovely to each other,
yeah,
and we'll just mock each other. So I took it in that sense, and I've ended up becoming very good friends with Violet Berlin on the back of it, because she absolutely loves it.
This
so.
Is what I was going to ask. Have you spoken to any of them? Is Violet the only one?
Well, Violet came to my 40th birthday party.
Excuse me, what now? This is brilliant.
So, yeah, so Violet, somebody had put Violet onto it on Twitter, I think, back when Twitter was actually Twitter and not a compost heap. And I thought, oh, like my heart dropped.
Yeah.
Because the last thing I want is for anyone to watch something and think, oh, that guy, he's just being mean. And Violet was obviously so lovely. And I'd watched her all through childhood on various things. And then I was just kind of just biting my fist when that message went. I was like, I was trying to keep it a secret from literally everyone, I guess. And she just came back, was like, that was hilarious. Oh, I absolutely loved it.
Great.
I think she showed it to her son. He loved it. And then we just started talking back and forth. But I just thought it was coming up to our 40th. And I think she was in the area. I just said, oh, you should come down. And she did. So I had like a weekend away with friends, and Berlin just turned up. And I got her, because I'm probably the only person in the country who has both of the Bad Influence magazines, which I got her to sign.
Oh, look at that. That's absolutely magic.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, that's brilliant.
That's my Violet Berlin collection.
Good for her.
I haven't got Andy yet, unfortunately.
You'll get him. You'll get him. Everyone gets Andy eventually. Oh, that's so lovely.
Yeah.
We should probably, I suppose, do a little nod towards the game that you've brought today. I think you've brought one of the toughest games that was ever released on computer systems. Do you want to tell us what it is?
So the game I've brought is Airwolf. More as a concept than as the game itself, I think.
Okay.
Which is what I'd said to you. Because Airwolf, to me, is a good, I guess it's a good metaphor for the kind of stuff that I try to do on my channel, because I'd never played Airwolf as a kid. I played it for the very first time. And when you're in a position like way in the future where you're trying to review a game in the past and you can't get off the second screen because it's too hard.
Yep.
So do you go, okay, I can't review that because I can only get to the second screen. That's not review worthy. So I made a joke video about it, which is basically a very, very long introduction. And then it's just me saying, I can't get off the second screen. And then the video ends. And I put it out there, not really knowing what the reaction was going to be, because I didn't know how people liked it at the time, et cetera, et cetera. And a massive influx of people obviously finding it funny, but equally saying that this was my experience with it as well. But then a few people saying, oh, no, actually, if you did get really good at it, you can do this and that and et cetera, et cetera. And I think that really symbolized nostalgia for me. And it's certainly, I see it in the comments where people will, if you've grown up with a game, doesn't really matter how bad it is. If that was your only game and you played it to death, you fell in love with it. And nostalgia has that weird thing of, you almost sometimes you know that the thing is terrible, but you still love it. And I think Airwolf was the first time I truly saw that in people.
Yeah.
Where on the whole, people were like, yes, this game is stupid and too difficult, etc. And then some people were just, no, but if you can get past the very second screen, then the next screen is also really difficult. And I mean, the rest of the game is just horrific. But
I have never seen, but no, I think I've seen the third screen, but I've never seen beyond that. And that second screen, you know, was, but this is it. You'd get a computer game. You'd buy a computer game maybe once a month. You'd get others through hooky method. Who was that? You were you the guy that had a tape to tape when you were
no,
a kid?
No, I wasn't. I was later on actually. My dad had a karaoke machine, and we used to use that. Had a double tape deck karaoke machine. I used to get games that way when I realized that was a thing that you could
was
do.
Was there someone we had people out? I won't say any last names in case they're working in the law, but I had a guy called Tony. Tony was kind of my dealer of BBC games. And then there was Christopher and Orlando, who I think I've mentioned a few times in this podcast,
where
they would, you know, they'd bring in those big blue, you know, sort of faux leather cases. I go, right, yes. What do you want?
Yes, I know exactly the ones as well. I didn't actually, you know, I think, again, that's why a lot of the games nobody on my channel has heard of, because 99% of the games I got were budget titles. Right. Like, my parents were like, you cannot spend more than £2 on a game. They didn't really understand the concept of probably quality involved. Say that Airwolf was £7, so yeah. Quality wasn't that involved. But yeah, most of the stuff I got was that bargain basement, £2, done kind of game, hence the bizarre collection reviews.
I remember I had a BBC, and I remember there was, you get a game once a month. And I'd said to my mum and dad, they were going into Slough, and I said, can you get a specific tape I want for the BBC?
Yeah.
And they brought it back. And it was Speech for the BBC, which allowed your BBC to talk.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I was like, yes. I think it was £9.99. And I loaded it up. I got it to say my name, got it to say the F word, got it to say the S word. And then I went,
I'm done.
What do I do now? That's it. It's done. £10 to hear my computer tell me to F off.
It's a stand-in. I remember the first time I heard that was... the ZX Spectrum had it a couple of, it was normally Oliver Twins, actually. The Oliver Twins like to put their voice in at the start of games, but it always came across as like, because the audio wasn't great. But I think it was the Amiga. It had a text-to-speech thing like built into the system, and it was one of the posh kids that went to school who had an Amiga. He had everything, actually, because he's just one of those kids. And I went round.
He wasn't getting love and attention from his parents, though. That's why he had those things.
Honestly, he didn't deserve it. He wasn't very nice. But he did have an Amiga. So I remember he showed me that, and I was like, oh, this is like robots, like off television. But I think all we used to do is type PLO, And over and over again. So it went blah 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 blah, blah, and I would just be in tears laughing at the computer trying to say these random letters that we typed.
Seriously,
in.
Kids, you have no idea how we made our fun back in the day. You have no, get a computer say plop 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 plop.
Exactly.
No idea. We were both at the I can never remember that. Was it the
Play Expo?
The Play Expo. Was that it in Blackpool?
It was, yeah.
I was up there because they very kindly paid my train fare, and I had to just sit on stage and play a silly game with some people at some point. They also put me in a terrible, terrible hotel that had stains on the ceiling.
Yes, I heard this in the last podcast that you had. Were you not in the castle itself?
No, I wasn't good enough to stay in the castle.
I was going to say, to be honest, you probably actually got there.
You were giving a talk there.
I was.
Is that the first time you've done something like
that? It is.
What was that? Because that's a big leap from I'm going to edit and write funny videos at home to I'm now going to stand in front of people and talk. I still struggle with that latter thing. So give the process. You get the email, the phone call saying, fancy doing this?
Yeah, so it was actually it was Stuart Ashen's fault. Stuart Ashen's, I think... Elliot might have been talking about Stuart. I just listened to that podcast the other day.
Yes, I'm glad you listened to one before you came on, just so you know you're in for.
Stuart, he's been on YouTube forever, but I think he was due to do a talk there, and he couldn't make it. So he just sent me a message on Twitter saying, oh, have you ever fancied doing a live talk? I was like, oh, yeah, I fancy doing one, but, you know, quite far in the future. And he said, oh, well, they're looking for somebody to do one. So I've put you forward. I was just like, well, okay, I guess I'm doing that then. So I had like a couple of months to prepare for it. And I knew the basics of what I was going for. There was a lot of technical issues and a lot of other stuff. I was kind of glad in a way, because the first time you're doing it, that's when you want everything to go wrong. Because then the next time it's going to be better. But it went down really well with the people that were there. And I was just trying to keep it as much... I don't know. I guess as much like my channel as possible, but knowing full well that nobody would really know who I was, because I'm not big enough. There was a few people in the audience who knew who I was, but there was more people there than I expected. I'll certainly put it that way. I just thought they've got me on like last billing in a room literally miles away from them.
It was a long way away, wasn't it, from the thing?
I think it's because that's where the projector and everything is, all of the equipment's over there. So I went to the one before, I think it was Chris Hulsbeck beforehand. I was looking around the room and I was like counting out all of the chairs. It was like, okay, let's say if I can fill like 25% of these chairs, then I'll be happy. Because yeah. I think even for Chris Hulsbeck, it's got quite a big name. It was like at 80% capacity, maybe. So I was like, okay, yeah, 25%, I'll be happy. And I think I about got there. It certainly wasn't uncomfortable being on stage. It wasn't too busy for me for my first time, but it wasn't so dead that I was like, I might as well not be here. I was really happy with it.
What did you talk about?
Weird old games you've probably never heard of was the discussion. And I did it alongside a guy called Mame Hayes, bless him, who he had to kind of work around me throwing ideas around and saying, oh, maybe we should do this. Oh, no, Lord, we'll do this. You do that. You do this bit. And we're having to work separately and then met each other for the first time there and then had to give a talk. With all of the technical issues that were going on as well. So it was two very different styles on stage, but talking about the same thing. And I totally overran. I think I'd prepared what I thought was like an hour's worth of stuff, but it wasn't. I think I got about 25% of the way through the stuff I'd prepared. And then I was like, I looked at the guy who was running it and I went, how long have we got left? And he just looked at his watch and he went, I'll give you another 5 minutes. And I was like, okay, right. I don't think we're going to get through all of this. just kind of had to go from there. But again...
Did you enjoy it?
I loved it. It was incredibly stressful. But I like doing stuff that is outside of my comfort zone, I think. I like it when I've done it, not the build-up to... The build-up to it's terrifying, but after the fact, it's just something I can say. I did that. I'm happy with that. So, yeah, I think regardless of how it had gone, at the end of the day, I could say I'd done it, and that's probably why I did it in the first place.
So the implication I'm picking up is you might do more.
Potentially. I know Stuart has mentioned about like various places doing it. I would like to do it in a different setting, I think. That was a difficult setting to do it in because a lot of the stuff, that was the other issue. This wasn't the event's fault. This is the hotel in general. We won't mention the hotel name. But that conference room is so bizarrely designed because it's got a projector in a room where the ceiling is glass.
Yeah.
So all of the stuff that I prepared was for the projector. And it was like, it was so see-through. It was, it wasn't ideal. So I think like a good setting and probably more preparation time and everything. Yeah, I would love to do another one.
The event itself is great. I love it. When you walk in that big hall, the noise is so big, it kind of pushes you back.
Yeah.
Yes, the hotel... It's
very Blackpool.
It's very. Do you know what? I don't know whereabouts in the country you are. You're anywhere near Blackpool?
I was not born in Blackpool, but I was raised in Blackpool until I was seven.
Oh, okay. So
I've got a lot of fondness for Blackpool. But yeah, I'm further north than Blackpool. I'm like as north as you can get, England wise.
I love British seaside resorts out of season. Mm. Genuine. I think there's something so great.
Yes.
You know, walking in the pissing rain in October on the beach, and I love. Completely unironically, I love Blackpool. You know, I never went there as a kid, but it reminds me of going on holidays in Britain in the 70s and the 80s. Yeah. I love the vibe there. If that Saturday night, because I left Sunday morning, that's why I didn't see you. That Saturday night, I went for a walk through town. Apparently on Saturday night, all the young lads with their cars with fluorescent lights underneath come and they just rev their engines very loudly.
Amazing.
Kids, go on, mate, rev your engine. Not in a Cockney accent. And they're just revving their engines. Oh, it's wild. It's a wild place.
That does sound like a very Blackpool thing. I think Blackpool was actually a perfect place for me growing up because my parents ran a guest house there, which is why they were there.
Gosh, okay, yeah.
And they had, slight diversion, they had one of those tabletop Space Invaders games, like the original ones for the bar.
Yeah.
And they threw it out when they moved.
No.
They're idiots. But Blackpool... It was the glory days of arcade.
Yeah.
So growing up around all of that, like not being too far away from it, because obviously the guest houses were all like seafront side. I grew up around arcade games. And
hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
And then would get the ZX Spectrum version of it and be severely disappointed with the quality in comparison to the arcade version.
Were you disappointed? Because I don't remember being disappointed at the conversions on the BBC because there was a part of me, I mean, I can see it now, and I'm certainly not looking back with rose-tinted glasses going, well, all those old games were really great. No, some of them were awful.
Some of them were.
And yes. You look back now and go, this. But I remember the conversions on the BBC and thinking, yeah, this is decent, actually.
Yeah.
This is decent.
There's two of them that I actually prefer on the ZX Spectrum over the arcade originals. Obviously, they don't look anywhere near as good, but it was a game called Motos. I think that's how you pronounce
Motos.
It.
Motos?
Yeah, Motos. It's a Namco game, and I much prefer the ZX Spectrum version of that. Not many people have heard of it, but it is really good. It's still worth playing now, I would say.
Okay.
And the other one is Green Beret, which...
Oh, yeah, Beret on the Spectrum was great, right?
Yes, and it was also quite different to the arcade version. There's certain little things that Joffa Smith had to change to basically make it work on the ZX Spectrum. He did it in really creative ways. So, like, just as a basic example, obviously the Spectrum can't do as many colors, but there was an enemy that would do a flying kick in the arcade game, and he had, I think it was a red bandana on, but they couldn't do that. So instead, Joffa Smith had programmed this soldier to skip along the screen, and when he got near you, he would do a flying kick. And I got so used to that when I went back to try and do the arcade game, I was constantly getting killed by the red bandana guy, because I was waiting for this skipping man to go dancing past. So yeah, they had to get creative, and I think some of them are quite outstanding for what they were working with.
Oh, definitely. I miss the Wild West days of where you could do like a game based on a movie.
Yeah.
Or you could just copy Pac-Man. You know, it's called Snapper. Well, okay, no one's gonna sue.
Well, it was fascinating because even the big companies were doing that. I think my favorite one, if I'm remembering this rightly, Ocean Software ripped off Donkey Kong. Nintendo didn't sue them. Ocean then renegotiated to get the license to make the official Donkey Kong, and then made the official Donkey Kong. So they ripped them off, Brilliant. Didn't get sued. And then made the official one for the ZX Spectrum. Yeah. And I cannot imagine a modern-day world where Nintendo would do that.
Well, when I go on holiday with my family, we go to Zakynthos' family over there. It would seem that all of the people running the fairground in the square have got the official Disney license, because it's covered with Mickey Mouse and Snow White. Yeah. So they clearly have. But it was wild. On the BBC, we had Snapper. That was Pac-Man.
Yep.
We had Killer Gorilla. It was Donkey Kong. It's a good name, actually, Killer Gorilla.
It is.
But just doesn't matter. We'll just copy someone else's game and rebadge.
Just left it.
Imagine that now. Someone brought out, you know, the big Car Theft 6, and it's just a rip-off. That's the best I could come up with at short notice.
I would say, though, that kind of does still happen. Not quite as blatant, I don't think. But you'll get the last one that I can think. I mean, Fortnite's a good example. There's a lot of games that obviously saw the success of Fortnite and tried to do it with the word successful. But I think the last one that got really big was Vampire Saviors, which kind of sort of pioneered a genre of, it's almost arcadey in a way, but you kind of just walk around. You don't shoot. The game automatically shoots the enemies for you. You just have to survive as long as you can.
Yeah.
And the amount of games that I see, even now, week after week after week, because it's quite a small idea. So again, a bedroom coder can be like, well, I can do that. I'll just change this, 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 and this. And yeah, there's a lot of stuff that they change, though it's not just like a carbon copy of that. They're trying their own tweaks, but it's amazing that it still kind of happens now. If somebody has a great idea, it's super successful, and then everyone's like, oh, well, if that's successful, this can be as well. Yeah. And it just keeps going until everyone gets bored of that game, and then it moves on to something else.
Do you play modern games?
Yes. Not a great deal of like AAA stuff. I don't really have the time for AAA stuff because they just go on forever.
It'd be like 100 hours.
Yeah.
What?
It's just like everyone's like, I'm not very good at. If I want to play a game, I tend to want to like get right into it and immediately be playing. Yeah. If I put a game on and there is a 10-minute cutscene of people slowly talking, I'm just like, oh, I could have just put a film on if I wanted to listen to you idiots waffling on about nothing. So I tend to play indie stuff because indie games they just harken back to the days of retro a lot of the time, where they want to just let you get on with it and play, which is the important thing to me.
I'm not one of those people that lives completely in the past. I just play Call of Duty. Because I think, right, I want to switch my head off, but I don't really want to think. I'll just play COD and run around shooting at people.
I think that's a perfect example, though, because I'm assuming, are you playing multiplayer for COD?
I'm playing online multiplayer, yes.
So that's a perfect example, because it's just a case of you have this window to play. So you play a few games and then that's it, you're done. And you don't have to think about it. But when if you've got like, I don't know, quite a lot of people who play like 100-hour RPGs.
Yeah.
And it is such a commitment. It's not just a commitment when you're currently playing it, though. It's a commitment to remember what you've done the next time you come back to it. And like, where was I in this story? Because if you leave it a week and you come back and you're like a guy with a big sword and no trousers on stood in the middle of a field and you haven't played it for a week, like, how have I got here and where am I going?
It's like waking up after a heavy night. What am I doing?
Yeah. Yeah.
What are the life choices I made to end up here? I could talk to you for ages. Honestly, I'm such a huge fan. And what is great is I've kind of come into your channel a few years after you've been running it. So it means there's tons for me to dive into. Yeah. I do like your dumpster dives. And I really loved your video on the Addams Family. Very quickly, just explain the Addams Family game. Because I had not heard this story and it is insane.
Yeah.
And your face. Do I have to go back there? Yes, you do.
It has been a while since I put that video out. So the Addams Family is just, it's one of these games where it could have been great. It could have been perfect because the Spectrum didn't get an awful lot of really good platform games. There was a lot of platform games, but none of them had like a basis to run off. They didn't have any examples that were working apart from Manic Miner, which is great, but it's very different in how it controls. So then when I got this game, I got the Ocean's Addams Family on a demo tape. And it's just incomprehensibly difficult because of the way that you move. It's like inertia-based. So in order to make a lot of the jumps, you have to take a running leap. And you're not quite sure what distance you're supposed to run before you jump, and you can't quite control yourself in the air. Everything is trying to kill you because it's a Spectrum game and everything does that. But the map for the game,
the map is the thing.
Enormous.
It's one of the funniest things I've seen on YouTube, where you show a bit of the map and you go, but this is how big the map really is. Mm. And it pulls back, and it pulls back for about 3 minutes, it feels like. I kept thinking, right, it's going to stop. Nope, he's still going. Nope, he's still going. Mm-hmm. It's insane.
It is, yeah. I don't know. I often wonder if they've made a game like this and the rules have been slightly different. Maybe it's been easier. And it gets to the point where they're about to publish and somebody says, whoa, whoa, whoa. If you make it too easy, people are going to refund it or whatever else. And so they tweak it the other way until it's so difficult that they've made all of this game that nobody is going to see because they can't. It's Airwolf. It's Airwolf all over
again. It's Airwolf.
Can't get past the second screen.
On that bombshell, David, thank you so much. Rose Tinted Spectrum is the YouTube channel. I think that's the Twitter handle and all the places.
Spectrum Tinted on
Spectrum
Twitter.
Tinted. Would you just bear with me for a second while I thank my fabulous patrons?
I will.
Okay, I want to say a big thank you to Harsh Singh, to Sam Hughes, to Craig Hannon, and to Martin Warren. And, of course, big salutes to the executive producers. This month, or this week, it's Mark Gidley, Tim Nichols, and Andy Goss. You are my executive producers. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Any idea what the next... Are you working on a video now? What is your schedule? Yeah.
So the next one will probably be Breaking Bad Influence, the penultimate episode of Breaking Bad Influence. In terms of games, though, I don't have one on the run at the minute because I've been busy with other stuff, but there will be more.
Well, no, when I say good, I mean good that, you know, I've spoken to a few YouTubers on this and outside. Hmm. And they can really feel the pressure. Got to keep making. I felt it myself in past lives. Got to keep making. If I'm not making, I'm not, you know. So it's good that you are able to go, no, I've got life. Life is going on. I'm going to deal with that stuff first.
Yes, exactly. It's, a lot of, again, this is the good thing about growing slow is the audience that I've got, they come back.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, I have to put out a video that gets 300,000 views, otherwise I'm going to die. Yeah. It's literally a case of, I'll just make it. I'll make it about what I want, when I want, and I'll put it out. And if people will probably watch it, it's fine. That's my philosophy.
Your channel is so good. I'm so pleased that I found it because you've kept me so entertained the last month or so. And I wish you the best of luck with it as it grows and grows.
Hmm. We'll get there.
I did say if you're a Spectrum owner, I've got something special for you. A good friend of mine, Conan, years and years and years ago, had a Spectrum and would write stuff on there. Now, I don't think he got round to writing a computer game. He did the title pages for some of them, for some computer games that never existed. So you may want to plug your socket into your Spectrum and do whatever it is you need to do and play the next bit of audio.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.